Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. Well, how we doing? We're ready for another episode of overwhelming evidence regarding our Constitution and what our Constitution is really about. And so that's what we're going to do. We're going to plow forward. And one of the reasons why I use this time of year to plow forward with this topic, going through the ratification debates, because I did this similar last year, is these are what they call the doldrums of summer. People are out on vacations and what have you. And the news, as I've always told you, almost every bit and fragment of news is not going anywhere. It's not like it's intelligence. Having lived in the intelligence community for a long time, there's a saying, intelligence has no value if it's not timely. In other words, you know, it's like you get shot in the head and then somebody yells, duck. That level of intelligence of telling you to duck so you don't get shot in the head had no value whatsoever. And so just trying to put it into a metaphorical space here. Most everything that is going on in the news is really not intelligence. These are just reactions to symptoms of problems, whether they be the gun violence, whether it be Circus Maximus and the idiocy coming from the Democrats and socialists, as well as the establishment Republicans. It is not of intelligence. What we are giving you regarding the ratification debates and this overwhelming evidence is intelligence. This, if once acted upon, this becomes power, political power, because when you realize that the Constitution, as defined by the framers, we now have what I would call the most dangerous recipe to the globalist agendas and those evildoers that are trying to destroy our republic. We have the miracle recipe because we have how this Constitution was defined. There's no court, there's no judge, there is no lawyer that can, you know, wiggle out of the facts of this contract. Well, we've got case law. Well, show me case law in the Constitution. Show me precedents and the Constitution allowing precedents to change the Constitution or the powers of the federal government. It's not there, my friends. What is there is clearly delineated in these ratification debates. That's why this is true and raw intelligence that we're giving you. There is no other show. You know, there are some people that like reading the Federalist Papers, and I've read them here and there, and I insert what did Madison mean by this or what did Hamilton mean, and pointing out Hamilton's red herrings and paper tigers. My point is, what I'm giving you is really the recipe. It is the elixir that we all need to drink so that we can all stand up and say, this is how the Constitution has been defined. If you want access to this, I have the links on my Mobius Strip Press page. Actually, what I'm going to do is update those links so that you can get all of the ratification debates and other founding documents from the Constitution Society. What I probably need to do is I probably need to copy those pages because I know John Rowland's health has not been good. He, you know, last year when I talked to him, he said he could be, you know, he could be dead tomorrow. His health is that bad. And he's an older gentleman. I've yet to hear back from him, so I don't know if he's still alive. I'll have to give him a call. Maybe I'll call him. You know, whenever somebody's name comes up in your thoughts or whatever, just like it just did. This is impromptu. I should call him because there's usually a reason why, you know, somebody's name pops up, especially when you know they're not doing well or what have you. Anywho, what we want to do is we want to plow forward. I want to bury you with the evidence so that you, as you dig your way out, you're like the phoenix. You are born again. You are rebirthed into a paradigm of the framers on a limited and defined government. That's why we're doing this. It's to help. It is to solve the problem. I'm not here to make myself rich. I am here to enrichen our posterity so that they can relish in the land of liberty. And that maybe we not only give it to them to relish, but maybe we can be the turning point. Maybe we can be the cornerstone or the keystone of restoring liberty throughout the world. Remember the Liberty Bell said, it was a Leviticus quote, proclaim liberty unto all peoples, kindreds, and tongues, or something like that. And so that's what Israel had that responsibility. America has that responsibility as well, because we have been blessed with this, I'll just call it a divine constitution. When we look at the fact of how it was done and everything else and how we have this hard, fast contract, the only way it becomes placid, the only way it becomes pliable, the only way we can make any changes to this contract is when the Article 5 process has been invoked by Congress or the states. And I'm here to tell you that those people engaged and involved at the state level that are trying to convene a convention of states, they don't care about the solution. They're only caring about gaining a little corner of the pie of money and control. They have no... If you are a Convention of States lover, send me an email, info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. You tell me what the silver bullet amendment is to the Constitution to get rid of all the unconstitutional government, to shut down the unconstitutional corporations, to shut down everything that has been built upon by a house of cards, by hoodwinking, lies, deceit, deceivery, you name it. The federal government is literally a house of cards, and it's going to be easy to blow down once we have this momentum going through the states. So let's dig into a lot of these things. But just remember, this show is also sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org, as well as RepublicReview.org. And you are listening to the only show that is providing you the necessary elements or the necessary, what do they call those when you're making a recipe? The necessary ingredients in taking back the Constitution. Our listen line is 605-562-4209 or 605-313-0599. I need to put these things up on the Red State Talk Radio, not on my Red State Talk Radio podcast page, so that way you have access to it if you don't know what it is or you can't remember because you're driving all the time. Anyway, the other thing I want to tell you is if you want to get involved, if you want to help us, then buy some Red State coffee. Get yourself a pound of Red State coffee and try drinking some Red State coffee. If you like it, if you don't like it, let us know. Give us a call, 425-270-5416. That's the office line for us here at Reclaiming the Republic or Republic Review. So, give it a try. Give us a call. We would love to have you help us sell Red State Coffee. And I know we're kind of at the ground level, or you know, this is a beginning of getting at least one sponsor. So let's support the sponsors that support this show. The other way you can help us is by directly funding us with GoFundMe on our crowdfunding campaign, which is on GoFundMe, and it's Reclaiming the Republic. And you can get those links to both the coffee and our crowdfunding on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. We do need your help. And the most important help that we could really use is your time and your resources and you know, getting involved, becoming a leader in your county, becoming a leader in your community. So with that, let me just tell you that the news that isn't going anywhere, we'll get to that. We'll, you know, once we're done with going through these citations, We've still got Virginia to go through. I've got New York to get organized. What we'll probably do is we will probably go through the need-to-know news and all the other little factoids of things that you're just not even aware of, that they're not telling you, so that you know just how bad it is, and maybe that will motivate you in getting involved. Now, this first citation that I have is from James Monroe. And the interesting thing is, you know, James Monroe and James Madison were actually very close friends. And same with Thomas Jefferson. Now, I will tell you, if you know your history, Thomas Jefferson was originally against the Constitution. He was not in favor of ratifying the Constitution because it was not amendable. But when he heard that Massachusetts ratified and forwarded their recommendations for amendments, he thought that was brilliant. And at that point, he said, I completely support the ratification and following what Massachusetts had done. Nevertheless, every state after Massachusetts ratified the Constitution, every state went through and suggested their own amendments to the Constitution. And so if you're kind of wondering, because I've got 4 seconds left, so what we're looking for is the order of that. And so I will have that ready when we come back from this hard break, because I just realized that I'm running out of time. So I will have the other states that submitted actual amendments with their ratification of the Constitution, so that we already had the makings for a Bill of Rights. So with that, we'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much. Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my 3 C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue.
All right. So, again, Massachusetts was the first state that ratified the Constitution, and they did so in February 1787, or no, 88. And so there were, what, Delaware, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, Georgia, and Connecticut that had already ratified without any amendments. And so what ended up happening was Massachusetts was the first to turn the page and say, we believe that these are essential amendments to the Constitution. One, and one of the most important, that actually John Hancock asserted
was that all things not delegated were retained to the states. In other words, even though they saw this enumerated constitution, but they did see what they called the sweeping clause or the necessary and proper and supremacy clause and so forth, they wanted it to be clearly articulated as a part of the Constitution to state that those things that had not been delegated by the states are retained by the states. So, Maryland, South Carolina, New Hampshire, Virginia, New York, and North Carolina were those states that actually ratified later and provided amendments. And as a matter of fact, North Carolina didn't amend the or didn't ratify the Constitution actually until after the government was 6 months into its operations, because they ratified in November when the the new Congress had been established in what, May of 1789. Anyway, let me just jump forward here with this Monroe citation, because here's Monroe talking about the Constitution as this evil. He, at this point in time, was a tool, a shill for Patrick Henry. And at this point in time, he had not had his... there were a couple of points in his and Madison's relationship that kind of turned on them both. And it took both of them, you know, olive branches and so forth. And it was pretty interesting that Monroe was the guy that was involved in trying to settle the conflict between Aaron Burr and Alexander Hamilton. And I believe it was Monroe that tried to get these guys to, you know, come together. He's tried to be the diplomat in a lot of different ways. But, in that capacity with Hamilton and with Burr, Monroe really failed. Or I should say, maybe he succeeded because he protected us from the nefarious modes of Alexander Hamilton. Alexander Hamilton would have bent and subverted the Constitution far worse had he stayed alive and using his puppet, John Marshall, and other puppets of the court and within government. Because he was literally running, you know, rickshaw over the Federalists at that point in time. And actually, the Federalists, those who were the monarchists were the Federalists at this point. There was a big severance between the Republicans and the Federalists by the end of the 1990s. It was like, well, 1798. Resolutions of Virginia and Kentucky, that is when there was a real turning of the sentiments, which created the Republican Party, which parted away from the Federalists. And the Federalists ended up becoming a minority, but Hamilton was still pulling the strings. He told who to appoint for John Adams in his midnight appointments of judges. He does not get credit for that. He does not get credit for some of the underhanded things that he did. And Ron Chernow, I've talked about him before. Ron Chernow has done a lot of spinning and has done a lot of disservice to the despicable character of Alexander Hamilton and the things that he tried to do to subvert our constitutional republic as defined in these ratification debates. So I don't think that Ron Chernow has provided the honest look. I think he definitely tried to create with a filtering some type of hero that Alexander Hamilton really wasn't. He was the only one that was confirmed as an adulterer out of all of the framers, because he was actually caught, not necessarily with his pants down, but he was being blackmailed and so forth. And anyway, let me move forward with what Monroe says, because this is interesting, because his 180 turn after the Constitution gets ratified is, it wasn't a miracle. It was just like he had this epiphany. He was no longer under Henry's influence and no longer believing that this thing was really bad. Monroe said this: "What is the object of the division of power in America? Why is the government divided into different branches? For a more faithful and regular administration? Where is there a check?" So he's asking, where is this check? we have more to apprehend from the union of these branches than from the subversion of any, and this union will destroy the rights of the people. There is nothing to prevent this coalition, but the contest which will probably subsist between the general government and the individual governments, or the state governments, what he's talking about, will tend to produce it. There is a division of sovereignty between the national and state governments. How far, then, will they coalesce together? Is it not to be supposed that there will be a conflict between them? If so, will not the members of the former combine together? In other words, the states. Where, then, will be the check to prevent encroachments on the rights of the people? There is not a third essential distinct branch to preserve a just equilibrium or to prevent such encroachments in developing this plan of government. We ought to attend to the necessity of having checks. I see no real checks in it. Now, if you understand what he's saying, he's basically pointing to the federal government or this general government that is created as one branch of government and the state governments as another branch. He basically believed there needed to be another branch of government to maintain checks on both of the governments. Well, I'm here to tell you, if you understand Republic Review, the auditing of the Constitution, and making honest brokers out of the general government, honest brokers out of the state governments and everything else, that is that, if you want to call it a branch, but it's not a branch, it's a process. I don't think, and Monroe was a lawyer, so he should have had some understandings of contract law, but you have to understand contract law was not that mature then. It was what it was, and that's what happened. He never looked at the Constitution until much later, or until he got away from Henry, that the Constitution was this compact. You got to remember, I love Monroe. And Monroe was the one that gave us the Monroe Doctrine that actually created a dominance of America in the Western Hemisphere. And here's the funny thing. If you look at the history of the world at that point in time and before, as Europe was colonizing and as Europe was reaching out into all of these other, new lands and building colonies, what happened in America was a miracle because Britain didn't expend any efforts in colonizing America. There were independent trading companies, and it was commercial endeavors and religious endeavors that established most every colony. Georgia was one of the only government colonies established because it was used as a penal colony. They abutted Georgia right next to Spain to use it as a buffer from all of the money that they were making from these productive colonies of produce and so forth, of goods that were a part of the mercantile system of Britain, tobacco and the foods and indigo and those types of things. And so when you start looking at how America got established, it wasn't like Britain said, we want to invest and we want to make America a great, economic opportunity for us. No, it actually started by the free enterprise and the freedom of religion and those achings within people to say, we want to be free, because it was getting pretty bad in Britain. The mercantile system was pretty despot and very oppressive. Anyway, so Monroe makes a very good salient point that there needs to be some kind of checks against both of these governments, if you understand what I'm saying, against the general government and the state governments, to keep them from encroaching upon the rights of the people. Now, John Marshall is the guy that answers Monroe. He comes up behind Monroe, and he says this: Mr. Chairman, I conceive that the object of the discussion now before us is whether democracy or despotism be most eligible. I am sure that those who framed the system submitted to our investigations and those who now support it intend the establishment and security of the former. The supporters of the Constitution claim the fide of being firm friends of the liberty and the rights of mankind. they say that they consider it as the best means of protecting liberty. We, sir, idealize democracy. Those who oppose it have bestowed eulogiums on monarchy. And so what is a eulogium? Got to tell you, I have no idea. Eulogiums, anyway. Moving on, we prefer this system to any monarchy because they are convinced that it has a greater tendency, and I'm out of time, so while I'm at break, I'm going to look up that eulogiums and tell you exactly what it is when we come back because I got to reread that over anyway. So, hey, stay tuned, and we will dynamically get you informed as to what this one word is that he used, and we'll be right back after this. Thank you so much. Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcast and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Mobiusstrip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Mobiusstrip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath even though we're not required to take it because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
Okay, so eulogiums are basically, it's another term for a eulogy, and it's obviously plural. And so eulogiums, in this context, is what he's basically saying is people were basically identifying that the monarchies in America are dead. And so John Marshall basically says, and I'll start over again, just partly, we, sir, idealize democracy. Those who oppose it have bestowed eulogiums on monarchy. We prefer this system to any monarchy because we are conceived that it has a greater tendency to secure our liberty and promote our happiness. We admire it because we think it a well-regulated democracy. Now, I want to be clear here. This is not a democracy in where people are actually voting for their, you know, the laws and everything else. It's a representative government, but it is a vote of the people, but it is not a vote of all the people. Only stakeholders in government or stakeholders in the land and so forth. You had to be a landowner. They did not believe that just anybody should be able to vote because then they would start voting themselves access to the treasury or to the purse, the public purse, so that they could start giving themselves benefits. And that's exactly what happens when you bestow that level of democracy across the board in every manner. And that's exactly, you know, one of our bigger problems we're having to face today. How do we put that genie back in the bottle? Everybody will admit it's a problem, but nobody knows how to get that genie back in the bottle. Well, we've got ways of talking about that, and that's what we have to do. We have to have honest conversations of actually how do we fix these problems that have been created from, you know, living outside the box of the system we've been given. Anyway, it is recommended to the good people of this country, they are, through us, to declare whether it be such a plan of government as will establish and secure their freedom. Now, see, who are these people debating this? This isn't the people that are debating this. These were the who's who of government. Those people who were well-educated and everything else, they were just rolling through these different names and terms. Monroe was in and out. Jefferson was in and out of government. Henry was in and out. All of these people in attendance were the who's who of politics of the time. So who was it that was really talking about we the people? It was the politicians. The people never really, they just continually trusted and elected these people continually. Anyway, it is recommended to the good people of this country, they are through us to declare whether it be such a plan of government as will establish and secure their freedom. He then told you that your continental governments will call forth the virtue and talents of America. This being the case, will they encroach on the power of the state governments? Will our most virtuous and able citizens wantonly attempt to destroy the liberty of the people? Will the most virtuous act the most wickedly? I differ in opinion from the worthy gentleman. He's talking about Monroe. I think the virtue and talents of the members of the general government will tend to the security instead of the destruction of our liberty. I think that the power, and I'm telling you what, those people who are in Congress today, if you look, they are they're nowhere near these people that are trying to secure our liberty. They are trying to destroy our liberty. And that's how we've done this full 180 because of democracy and so forth. I think that the power of direct taxation is essential to the existence of the general government. And oh, by the way, I said this before, Monroe was a huge opponent for this direct taxation thing. And that's why Marshall is coming back in talking about this, that he wants to, you know, clearly identify that you have to have the ability as a government to tax, to pay for your essential functions. And so he says, I think the power of direct taxation is essential to the existence of the general government and that it is safe to grant it. To only pay for the necessary and proper government that is allowed for by the Constitution, not for health care, not for welfare, not for housing subsidies or agricultural subsidies or energy subsidies and all of this other crap. All of that is unconstitutional. The only thing they should be taxing us for are doing the things that they have been delegated the power to. And so I think the power of direct taxation is essential to the existence of the general government and that it is safe to grant it. If this power not be necessary and as safe from abuse as any delegated power can possibly be, then I can say the plan before you is unnecessary, for it imports not what system we have unless it has the power of protecting us in time of peace and of war. And so, interesting comeback from John Marshall regarding James Monroe's assertion. Madison comes on the stage and says this, I shall take a view of certain objects which shall lead to some reflection to quiet the minds of those gentlemen who think that the individual governments will be swallowed up by the general government. Now, let me go on aside here. The Virginia plan was precisely that. It was going to swallow up the state governments, and the state governments were to be administrative in form only. In other words, what was happening in the beginning of the Constitutional Convention, Madison was trying to propose this big, huge, centralizing and all-consuming government. What ended up coming out of the Constitution was something completely different, a very limited and defined government. And so Madison got on board with this, and he saw the brilliance of this. And he said, let me go on. Reflections to quiet the minds of those gentlemen, and the individual governments will be swallowed up by the general government. In order to effect this, it is proper to compare the state governments with the general government with respect to reciprocal dependence and with respects to means that they have of supporting themselves or of encroaching on another. At the first comparison, we must struck with this remarkable facts. The general government has not the appointment of a single branch of the individual governments or of any officers within the states to execute their laws. Are not the states integral parts of the general government? Is not the president chosen under the influence of the state legislatures? May we not suppose that he will be complacent to those whom from whom he has been, his appointment and from whom he must have his reappointment? The senators are appointed altogether by the legislatures. So he's pointing out that in the actual government created that we don't have today, we can clearly see that the states and state legislators had far greater control over what the heck was coming out of Washington, D.C., or what was actually going in for those who were going to serve us. And so these things are really important to understand when we start moving into, because these things are not in play anymore. We do not have a Senate that's appointed by state legislators. We have a Senate that is bought for by the globalists of the world who are going in. That's why Senate races cost millions, hundreds of millions of dollars, because these corporations are hot on the tail of trying to gain control via treaties, because they do understand that the Senate has the ability to change what is considered constitutional and the laws of the land and what is not considered constitutional and the laws of the land. And so Madison comes in on this comment, and this is kind of under the concept of compensation. Mr. Chairman, let me ask those who oppose this part of the system whether any alteration would not make it equally or more liable to objections. Would it be better to fix their compensations? Would not this produce inconveniences? What authorizes us to conclude that the value of coins will continue always the same? Would it be prudent to make them dependent on the state governments for their salaries? On those who watch them with jealous eyes and who consider them as encroaching not on the people but on themselves? But the worthy member supposes that Congress will fix their wages so low that only the rich can fill the offices of the senators and representatives. Who are to appoint them? The rich? No, sir. The people are to choose them. If the members of the general government were to reduce their compensations to a trifle before the evil suggested could happen, the people could elect other members in their stead who would alter that regulation. The people do not choose them for their wealth. If the state legislatures choose such men as senators, it does not influence the people at large in their election of representatives. They can choose those who have the most merit and least wealth if Congress reduces their wages to a trifle. What shall prevent the states from giving a man of merit so much as will be adequate compensation? I think the evil very remote, and if it were now to happen, the remedy is in our own hands and may be ourselves be applied. And so with that, I'm, you know, at another hard break. But I've been an advocate in trying to make compensation for legislatures in the states more representative of what they're doing, because they are not paid enough for what they need to be doing. And that's where corruption actually comes in, where these guys get bought and sold by a lot of other people. But with that, let me go and we'll be right back. Folks, Red State Talk Radio has brought back its monthly newsletter. I know everyone gets a lot of emails, but this is not a daily or weekly newsletter. It's a monthly newsletter. So you will not be overwhelmed with a plethora of emails from Red State Talk Radio. Come on, it's only once a month. I'll be contributing a constitutional perspective to one of the current issues to help everyone see an alternative perspective, or what I believe would be a framer's perspective regarding the issue to help us maintain a constitutional paradigm. I will also provide information regarding a significant historical context to the time of year so that we can remember our history, so we will not be doomed to repeat the inevitable failings from forgetting our past and origins. Just go to Red State Talk Radio and sign up for the newsletter. This way you can get a focused view of what is going on in the Republic as well as what is going on at Red State Talk Radio. Thank you. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255. Okay, so as we move forward or plug away, Governor Randolph is the next citation. And you got to remember that some of the governors were absolutely against this new federal government. And Governor Randolph and Johnson of North Carolina and Virginia recognize the advantages of this new constitution. And so Randolph says this, but the insertion of the negative restrictions has given cause of triumph. It seems to gentlemen, they suppose that it demonstrates that Congress are to have powers by implication. I will meet them on that ground. I persuade myself that every exception here mentioned is an exception, not from the general powers, but from the particular powers therein vested. To what power in the general government is the exception made respecting the importation of Negroes? Not from a general power, but from a particular power expressly enumerated. In other words, the importation was to be shut down in 1808. So there was nothing in there that actually said within the Constitution that, you know, slavery was allowed or not. What it stated was it was going to shut down the slave trade as of this date because it was stepping into the state's business and saying, we're not going to allow you to have control of the importation of slaves anymore, nor the importation of any persons. We are taking full control over immigration. This is an exception from the power given them of regulating commerce. And this is international commerce. This is not commerce amongst the states. He asks, where is the power to which the prohibition of suspending the habeas corpus is an exception? I contend that by virtue of the power given to Congress to regulate courts, they could suspend the writ of habeas corpus. This is therefore an exception to that power. The third restriction is no bill of attainder or ex post facto law shall be passed. This is a manifest exception to another power. We know well the attainders and ex post facto laws have always been the engines of criminal jurisprudence. This is therefore an exception to the criminal jurisdiction vested in that body. The fourth restriction is that no capitation or other direct tax shall be laid unless in proportion to the census before directed to the taken. Our debates show from what power this is an exception. And that's in Article 1, Section 8. The restriction of the fifth clauses, or the clause, are an exception to the power of regulating commerce. The restriction in the sixth clause that no money should be drawn from the treasury, but in consequence of appropriations made by law. So here's the problem. They've been making laws that are unconstitutional, and they have been able to take money in doing so. This is an exception, this is an exception to the power of paying the debts of the United States, for the power of drawing money from the treasury is consequential of that of paying the public debts. The next restriction is that no titles of nobility shall be granted by the United States. If we cast our eyes to the manner in which titles of nobility first originated, we shall find this restriction founded on the same principles. These sprang from military and civil offices. Both are put in the hands of the United States, and therefore I presume it to be an exception to that power. The last restriction restrains any person in office from accepting of any present or emolument, title, or office from any foreign prince or state. It must have been observed that, though the Confederation had restricted Congress from exercising any powers not given them, yet they had inserted it not from any apprehension of usurpation, but for the greater security. This restriction is provided to prevent corruption. All men have a neutral, inherent right of receiving emoluments from anyone unless they be restrained by the regulations of the community. An accident which actually happened operated in producing the restriction. A box was presented to our ambassador by the king of our allies. It was thought proper, in order to exclude corruption from foreign influence, to prohibit anyone in office from receiving or holding any emoluments from foreign states. I believe that if, at that moment, when we were in harmony with the King of France, we had supposed that he was corrupting our ambassador, it might have disturbed that confidence and diminished that mutual friendship which contributed to carrying us through the war. Very interesting. But if you want to understand what these restrictions are, when these guys talk about it, that's how you understand them. Ex post facto laws is something I harp on a lot. And it is one of those things that clearly goes through this model of where, you know, if something is completely legal right now and then Congress all of a sudden makes it illegal and they start arresting you, they can't do that. That's an ex post facto law. It's the same thing with your state legislatures. If having property and being able to drill a well and being able to, you know, mine or do anything with your property is, you know, you buy that land, it's yours, you can do anything with it. Then all of a sudden they pass a law that says, oh, you can't do this, you can't do this, and you can't do this. Mineral rights, water rights, and those types of things they have been passing, and those are ex post facto laws. Now, mineral rights have been around for a long time, and so it has been grandfathered, but anybody that owns land that goes back 200 years or what have you, you still have full mineral rights. And the fact is, where in the Constitution did the federal government have the ability to regulate and take away your mineral rights? Where? Where is that? Where did we delegate that power and ability to them? The land belongs to the people. And that's a quote from Jefferson. Anyway, on the subject of a Bill of Rights, the want of which has been complained of, I will observe that it has been sanctified by such reverend authority that I feel some difficulty in going against it. I shall not, however, be deterred from giving my opinion on this occasion. Let the consequence be what it may, at the beginning of the war, we had no certain Bill of Rights, for our character cannot be considered as a Bill of Rights. It is nothing more than an investiture in the hands of the Virginia citizens of those rights which belonged to British subjects. When the British thought proper to infringe our rights, was it not necessary to mention in our Constitution those rights which ought to be paramount to the power of the legislature? Why is the Bill of Rights distinct from the Constitution? I consider Bills of Rights in this view, that the government should use them when there is a departure from its fundamental principles in order to restore them. This is the true sense of the Bill of Rights if it be consistent with the Constitution, or contain additional rights which not put in the Constitution. If it be repugnant to the Constitution here will be a perpetual scene of warfare between them. The honorable gentleman has praised the Bill of Rights of Virginia and called it his guardian angel and vilified the Constitution for not having it. Give me leave to make a distinction between the representatives of the people of a particular country who are appointed as the ordinary legislature having no limitations to their powers and another body arising from a compact and with certain delineated powers, where a Bill of Rights necessary or were a Bill of Rights necessary in the former, it would not be in the latter, for the best security that can be in the latter is expressed enumeration of its powers. But let me ask the gentleman, where his favorite rights are violated? They are not violated by the 10th section, which contains restrictions on the states. They are violated by the enumerated powers. Here, His Excellency, read from the 8th and 12th articles of the Bill of Rights. Is there not a provision made in this Constitution for the trial by jury in criminal case? Does not the third article provide that the trial of all crimes be by jury, and held with the same said crimes shall have been committed? Does it not follow the cause of nature and acquisition must be produced, because otherwise they cannot proceed on the cause? Everyone knows that the witnesses must be brought before the jury, or else the prisoner will be discharged. Call and see, that's a constitutional right. You have the right to face your accuser. If your accuser is a camera and an admin pogue, then he has to be there. Whoever is the one that is looking at that imagery and the camera and so forth, you have a right to face your accuser. Calling of evidence in this favor is coincident to his trial. There is no suspicion that less than 12 jurors will be thought sufficient. The only defect is that there is no speedy trial. Consider how this could have been amended. We have heard complaints against it because it is supposed the jury is to come from the state at large. And as I've completely ran out of time in going through this long dissertation from Governor Randolph, he is absolutely defending the Constitution and the lack of the Bill of Rights. And we will have more on this in our next episode. We're giving you the truth. We're giving you the light. We're reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless. Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.